I'm Lisa Hansen. How are you all? Good. Okay. We have a nice, intimate audience here. So let's try to get an understanding about the level of expertise regarding the Chinese online games industry. How many people are Chinese? One. How many people have been to China? Three. How many people know what a PC online game is? Okay, most. Not all. And let's see what else. How many people know that video game consoles are banned in China? Okay. That's a good gauge. I know where to start. All right, well, welcome. My company, Nico Partners, is a market research firm. It's 10 years old this year, and we are very niche and nimble. We're based in Silicon Valley and Shanghai, and we cover the Chinese games industry. And as of 2002, we added Southeast Asia coverage to our reports. So we help big and medium-sized, not so much small, game companies, publishers, hardware makers, service providers, governments, trade associations, this kind of thing. We help them understand what's going on with the Chinese games market. And that is why I have a couple points of data and some information to share with you today. But let's have a little bit of a primer. About 2,000 years ago, going way back, and I promise not to cover each of those years in this talk, since they're giving me an hour, the Chinese invented the game Go. And then there happened to be a whole lot of Chinese. And then they were kind of hungry for some entertainment. And you fast forward a bit and you get to the point where there are computers and computer games and maybe they like that entertainment, but uh-oh, we got a communist government and they don't like a whole lot of different kinds of content, so we have a censorship issue. And then you still have a bunch of eager Chinese people ready for entertainment. So in walks The Legend of Mir in 2001. And The Legend of Mir is the first PC online game to have launched in China. It was made by the Korean developer WeMade. And this game is notable because until then, Chinese games, the non-Go board game type games, computer games, had been easily copied and prolifically copied, and there wasn't a lot of generation of revenue, and there was basically no control by the Chinese government. So PC online games emerged. The government approves or denies a game based on its content, and there are a whole lot of taboo topics like Tibet and things like that. And so once a game, and blood, by the way, and ghosts. And so if you have a game that where you fight, your blood has to be green or blue, but it can't be red, and no spirits can emerge from an avatar that has deceased. And there are lots of different things that have to do with game content in China. So, but this is the first game that launched there. And then the market took off. So until 2001, incidentally, in the year 2000 and before, game consoles were legal. And then there was an outcry from the public that said, uh-oh, our youth is being corrupted by all this foreign game technology. Take it out. So the government officials said, okay, no more consoles, and thinking they were solving the problem. But then the advent of online games, and voila, the problem exists. Now we have a whole heck of a lot of gamers in China, like 150 million. So the government has not ceased to stop the quest for entertainment through digital means, but they have managed to kind of force the evolution of an industry that can work within the confines of a piracy-rich environment and within the needs of needing to regulate game content. A little tiny bit about Nico, so you know who we are. Our first research reports on the Chinese game industry were published in 2003. We do syndicated research, which means we publish it, you all can buy it, and we also do custom research, which means If you have a game that's launched in China and you want to figure out why it's not doing so well, we'll do focus groups for you, or we'll do custom surveys. We have a database of like 1.5 million Chinese people and all sorts of stuff. We're pretty focused. We get it. We have a wide coverage of games, mobile, social, MMORPG, etc. But it's very narrow in scope. So, a little bit about the Chinese game market. In 2011, by our estimates, it generated $6.8 billion of revenue. That's a lot of money. In 2001, it generated $10 million. So from $10 million to $6.8 billion, as we've been watching it, and the growth has just been really tremendous. There are 150 million online gamers. These are the end of 2011 figures. There's a big emphasis on hardcore gamers, but also social games, meaning those done through the Chinese equivalents of Facebook and the like, but there's no Facebook there. We'll get to that, too. And but the growth, while it's been tremendous, you know, upwards of 50, 60% a year, sometimes 30, 40% a year, it's slowing, and last year it was like 34%, and all the stock analysts went crazy, and now everyone's selling off the stock because, oh, my God, 34% a year is just not, is not good growth or something. But even through 2015, our forecast period, the compound annual growth rate is still above 20%, 22, 24%, something like that. So there's still a lot of growth left in this market. On the SNS, stands for Social Networking Service, SNS games, the free games are the most prominent. And actually, for the whole entire market, most of that $6.8 billion was generated off of free-to-play games. So they're not really free after all, but they have a virtual economy, and you pay for what you want to pay for within it. And some people do play entirely for free, like 90% of the population. But 10% of the population pays to play, and they generate that much revenue. All right, I mentioned the illegal console market. There's a little block up there that says genre expansion, because it had been almost entirely just puzzle games and then MMORPGs, which stands for Massively Multiplayer Online Role-Playing Game, if you don't know what that is. And that means a whole bunch of people play together and play against each other, and it's a perpetual universe, and you have a... Anyway, you're going to have to learn about the technical side of it somewhere else. That's not my strength. And then there is, since they all play on PCs, there is a PC offline game segment, but it generates, like, no revenue at all. There are very few, less than 1 million units a year sold legitimately, and the rest are all illegally downloaded by just a ton of different websites where you can illegally download games. And... as mentioned, 150 million Chinese play PC online games. They play them at home, they play them at the office, they play them at school, and they play them at internet cafes. There are 168,000 internet cafes by our estimation. 144,000 of those are licensed, and 24,000 are unlicensed or really small or something. And the home PC penetration is rising, so the use of internet cafes is falling, and they're not necessarily a pleasant place to go. Smoky, people spit on the floor, they lay all over the chairs, it's kind of gross. So if you can afford a home PC, you probably never go back to the internet cafes unless you live in a big city and you're trying to go be social with your friends, or if you want to go learn about new games, because a lot of the Chinese online game companies sent scores and scores of field marketing people out to internet cafes across the country to promote their games and teach them about what they are. That's the main way to get people to know about a new game. If the population of Chinese online users, internet users, were a country, it would be the third largest country in the world after China and India. It's larger. There are 513 million Chinese internet users, which is about 200 million more people than we have in the United States. And even if we just count the country of Chinese online gamers, we get to like number 9 in the world or something. So it's sizable. The market has gone crazy, like I said, from 2001 to 2 million gamers and $10 million in revenue, all the way up through 2015, our forecast, 266 million gamers and $14 billion in revenue. But this data reflects only the sales that are generated in China. The Chinese online game operators these days, as I'll get into in a couple more slides, are now expanding internationally. And it's possible that they will generate a lot more revenue beyond their own shores. And so we get to watch for that growth as well. The biggest barrier to success in this vast market, which you should be naturally assuming, wow, so many people, so much revenue, let's all go. But there's this pesky thing called regulations, and they get in the way. So not only do they want to ban your content, but they have all kinds of different rules. And there's several agencies that monitors. General Administration of Press and Publications, known as the GAPP, is the one that says, let's check out your game to see if there's any content we don't want to allow. And the Ministry of Culture monitors all things internet, and once a game is approved, they have the obligation to make sure it stays approved, that it doesn't change once it's entered the country. And then the Ministry of Industry and Information Technology is the one that has determined that consoles are a threat to the world and therefore will not be allowed. But they may be allowed soon because suddenly Chinese companies are developing consoles too. And it might just be that they didn't want all the consoles in their countries to be developed by foreigners. I don't know. It's possible. So now we're looking to see when a Chinese company launches their console, which has already been announced, a division of Lenovo, and the console is called the iSEC, S-E-C. If that gets launched, then they will be forced to revise the ban on consoles to some extent. But there will probably be a two-pronged system that still bans Xbox, PlayStation, and the Wii. So innovation in the Chinese games industry in general was born from necessity. Remember all those eager, enthusiastic entertainment wanters in China? Well, and the country is really big on piracy, as I mentioned. For most things software, it's upwards of 90%. For the game software, it's about 95% piracy rates. So you really don't stand a chance unless you figure out how to sell a service that people can't get on their own instead of a disc, which people could copy on their own. So online games they kind of developed out of a necessity to beat the system, which is sort of a, you know, political point for businesses solving issues that don't have to be solved by politicians, but I will not digress into my own thoughts on politics and the like. And as mentioned, consoles are illegal, so PC online games are the way to go in China if you want to play games. In 2001, before the launch of Legend of Mir, there were no online games. And in 2011, there are several industry giants in China who are in the online games space. So many of these companies up here are publicly traded, and they have it on American exchanges or in Hong Kong, and they're growing by leaps and bounds. But of more than 100 Chinese online operators today in China, only about 8 of them make most of the revenue. And there are about 10 others that tend to get lucky with a hit game from time to time, or there might be some niche players that target a certain audience or a certain region of China. But capital from the market, from the fact that they're publicly traded, enables these companies to help develop better technology and obtain games either by self-development or licensing, and then serve those ravenously hungry Chinese gamers. This is a ranking that we did last year on the Chinese online game operators that... You can see their market capitalization, which is actually as of March 1st, 2012, but the 2010 games revenue, because some of them have not yet reported their year-end results for 2011. So you can see that Tencent is just a lot bigger than the other companies up there. And actually, Tencent has been ranked as high as number 3 in the world for in terms of size of internet companies by market capitalization. So it's like by Amazon and Tencent. They're all these massive companies. The regulations are a roadblock for foreigners, and not only are the regulations there about content, but a game must be operated by a Chinese company using servers in China, and the Chinese currency, the yuan, also known as the renminbi, is not tradable outside of China quite yet. So companies must license their games to a Chinese online game operator. Foreign companies must do this. And then they have to share revenue with that company. And this is very different than the way it works in the United States, where the Chinese or any other company can just come here, set up shop, start operating their games, keep all their money, and be happy. But in China, you have to go through a domestic company. And that domestic company, by the way, owns your IP rights in China. So they own the license to your game, and they own your rights. You have fancy lawyers, and you pay them a lot of money to make sure that you get your rights back if you pull your game. But for the operation of the game there, they are the one that owns the paper. And it makes it difficult to transfer from one online game operator to another, as was demonstrated in the case where Blizzard's World of Warcraft had been operated by one company called The Nine. That relationship went a little south, and then they changed to a new operator called NetEase. And in the process, it was just a lot of confusion, and the game wound up being off the market for at least 6 months or more. And the government was using this as an example of what not to do. So it gets pretty political over there. Some of the logos you see up here are game companies that have offices in China. But even those that do, like Blizzard has several hundred people there, they still have to license their games through other companies. But some companies just don't even have an office there. They just license, like Sony Online Entertainment. They just license their games there. Big World Technology is not a game developer. They develop game engines, but they are from Australia. And then King's Isle, I stuck that one in because it's a Texan company, and with offices in Dallas and in Austin, and they developed a game called Wizards 101, and it is now being licensed to Taomi, which is a tweens or a youth portal in China, and they kind of specialize in the target market of Wizards 101. So neither Wizards 101 nor Taomi would make the top of any of these lists I'm talking about, but because we're in Texas, I figured what the heck. And then the country's market is hampered by the copycat mentality that follows along from all the piracy. These Chinese online game companies are great at technical infrastructure issues. They're great at hosting multiple hundreds and hundreds of servers and having millions of concurrent users, which means, you know, sometimes more than 2 million people are playing the same game at exactly the same time, and they're all having fast uptime and enjoying their ride. But they're not so great at creativity. And a lot of that is probably based on the fact that there are few global competitors that are allowed to really show their might and strength in China. They might just license one game or two games, but they might not be there totally exchanging ideas the way it works when you can have staff be recruited from one company to another, or you have little meetups at bars and you talk about creative issues. It's different when you block these companies from really existing there to the extent that they could. And then the Chinese are just learning from themselves over and over and over again. So they've recognized that the Legend of Three Kingdoms is really a popular theme, so a lot of the games are based on the Legend of the Three Kingdoms, and it gets a little boring. They enjoy the cute style games, which are softer, kind of, if you think about Japanese anime, kind of shapes and figures, that's quite popular. But on the casual side, casual and SNS games are copied over and over and over and over again. The game companies are really, they need to pay attention to what the gamers want, not just what the gamers want who are already playing their games, But what would the gamers prefer to do if they were offering something different to them? And so that's where market research comes in. And if you take time to understand the potential audience instead of just the existing audience, excuse me, then you might be able to develop like out of your comfort zone and open up the market even more. But this isn't true just for the Chinese online game operators. This is true for all online game companies. And I worry even about, say, Zynga, which checks its own data analytics every 5 minutes. But really, they're only checking the analytics about their existing gamers within their own games. And they need to figure out a way to check analytics on gamers who are not yet playing their games. And then, or again, sort of testing ideas with their existing gamers. What would you maybe spend more money on than we're offering you right at this moment? And then we could see that the scope of online games in general, not just Chinese online games, might grow to multiple genres, multiple types of ways of doing business. Here are a few screenshots just to give you an idea. This is World of Warcraft Chinese version. So you can just see the repetitive nature of the games and also just see what games are kind of popular. This World of Warcraft worldwide now has about 10 million gamers. It's fallen a little bit, but it's still a very popular game. Oops, sorry. This one's called Dungeon and Fighter. It's currently the number one title for MMORPG. It's by Tencent and developed by Nexon of Korea. This is Fantasy Westward Journey. It's been in the top five list for MMORPGs for about 6 or 7 years. They just don't get tired of it. And these games are updated all the time, though, like every 20 days or so, there is an update. In contrast to a newer category of online games in China, which is called web games, these are browser-based games. The games I'm showing you are client-based games, meaning you download them, and then you play online after the client is downloaded. But web games, you never download the client. You just always play within the browser. And it works well for some areas where downloading is just it's more difficult because of the infrastructure. But web games are catching on, and a lot of them are generating a lot of money. But they're not updated very frequently, maybe only every 6 months. And so you get, or maybe not at all. So you get people kind of tired of those games more quickly than you do of these perpetual universes where they are updated all the time, all the time, all the time. Part of that is for technical reasons to prevent hackers and whatnot. And part of it is just to, you know, continue the storyline. Tencent has a line of games called QQ. And they started off as an instant messaging service called QQ. And they have, almost every Chinese person you'll ever meet uses QQ to instant messenger each other. And so as such, they have a ready audience to play games. And one of their popular games is QQ Tang. They also now, Tencent just told me last week at the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco that they have 10,000 internet cafes called QQ cafes. And I guess they just promote their QQ games in these cafes. And I have yet to go visit one, but it's on my things to do list next time I go there to see my team in China. The Chinese operators have moved along a timeline as they've developed their expertise, and the market demand has grown as well. So initially they would just license games from overseas developers, and there was very little, if any, domestic development done. And then they started to develop in-house, finding that they could keep more of the money if they would develop in-house instead of pay the licensing royalties fees, and also have more control over the games and try to develop for the local market. And then it turned out that there were a new group of domestic development studios, and they could license games from domestic development studios as well as develop them internally. And after having all these different areas to draw from, they were able to expand genres and business models. And it wasn't until 2006 or so, or 2007 even, that the notion of a free-to-play game came into the lexicon. And before that, everything was just time-based games or entirely free without a virtual economy. And you'd pay, if a time-based game, you'd pay for, say, 30 hours or 60 hours or 30 days or whatever it is. And then when that time period expired, you would top up your card. Well, now you have these prepaid cards and you pay into an account. And even though the game is free to play, if you want to do anything in the virtual economy, you have to pay. You draw down from your account, which is already registered, and then you top up your card. So when you expanded to different kinds of business models, it welcomed gamers who didn't want to pay up front and grew the market to more occasional gamers and new gamers and things like this. And those gamers didn't want to play just the hardcore MMORPGs, so then they started developing things like dancing games or licensing dancing or singing or basketball or racing games. And so there was a big genre expansion as a result of the expansion of business models. And now there's an expansion to foreign markets. And I'll talk a little bit more about that, but we're in the point in the timeline where they don't feel like they've exhausted their local market, but at the same time, they're looking for growth elsewhere. So they are expanding to overseas. And they are acquiring companies overseas from when I say overseas, I mean not Chinese companies. And then they are watching for new competitors that might rise up and, you know, compete directly against them for the online game world in North America or Europe, and then perhaps threaten their market share in China. And in some cases, they're just using their coffers of cash from the markets and buying these companies up to prevent them from competing against them. Social networking service games have taken China by storm and really opened up the market to more gamers. I mean, it kind of added 40, 60 million gamers to the mix as soon as these games were readily available. And there, you'll notice that there's no Facebook logo here because the Facebook is blocked. If you're savvy and you have a virtual private network of VPN, you can get on Facebook, but for the most part, it's blocked. And so they play through... Tencent has two social networking services that have games available. And then Renren is another one that is publicly traded. And Kaixin 001 is another leader. But there are several hundred registered social networking service companies in China. And some might have one game, some might have no games, but there are several hundred. And these are just the leaders. Word Weibo means microblogging, and that's sort of like Twitter in that they can have 140 characters to write a tweet, but 140 Chinese characters conveys a lot more information than 140 letters and spaces. So these are more robust, and they have also developed games channels within them. So Sina Weibo is the biggest one, and Tencent Weibo, and Tencent is also available in English now. And there are games, Sina even has a games channel currency. There is starting to be less of a difference between the microblogging games and the social networking service games, and they're all social games anyway, and they're all copying each other anyway, so really this is just the kind of additional segment in the market beyond those web games I mentioned and the client-side games. In the characteristics of SNS game in China are simple, copycat, and ubiquitous. And if the picture in the upper left was popular, then the next three companies would develop a game looks pretty much just like that. There are so many copies of Farmville in China that it's really hard to figure out where it actually started. And many people are saying that Zynga's Farmville actually started in China and that Zynga copied it. So who knows? I guess there's going to be no way to ever prove that one way or the other. The most popular version in China is called Happy Farm by a development company called Reku, R-E-K-O-O. And that company has seen success throughout Asia and Japan, but not yet really penetrating markets here. In Happy Farm, gamers steal vegetables, which is different from what goes on in Farmville. But that's taboo, according to the government regulators, so now they pick vegetables from each other without permission. So it's just they change the word to make the regulators happy, but the action is still the same. It's still the idea of thievery of your neighbor. So the Chinese online game operators are leading their global competitors in some ways. And as mentioned, most of that is in the technical infrastructure capabilities. They can support more than 2 million peak concurrent users, which is really impressive. NetEase has 380 servers operating at once for World of Warcraft, just in mainland China. And that takes a lot of staff to make sure all those connections work and that you can support all the gamers, even in the call centers or anything. So they have a lot of technical know-how. But nearly all of that $6.8 billion generated in 2011 came from the virtual economy and in-game item sales. So that also implies that they have a tremendous knack for the development of economic systems within the game. So the ability to have items for sale and or items of chance or trading. And then there is a notion of real money trading, which comes out of gamers trading in the real world what they had in the game and getting paid for it. And real money trading is quite popular in Southeast Asia and in some countries, but it's illegal in China, even though people still do it. So on the other hand, they're lagging behind their global competitors in some ways, such as the creativity, which I've already talked about, and some of the development issues, just the whole development cycle. They're really good at art assets, but they might not be good at some of the other assets, and in global understanding. And a lot of that comes from the fact that they've been functioning in a bubble that's been enforced by the government for so many years. So these companies are really China class. They're not world class companies. And when you have a China-class company that tries to expand internationally, it's sort of like the big man on campus in high school getting into the University of Texas. He's going to be surprised that he's no longer the most popular guy. And that's happening now a little bit with the Chinese game operators. And they've got their toe in the water, a lot of them have their toe in the water outside of China, and it's just going to be interesting to watch their continued growth. I think if they start to listen to what the gamers want beyond what they're already serving, they could take all that technical expertise and all their money and really develop games for each market where they operate successfully. But it's going to take more of a melding of the minds to do that. So this talks a little bit more about the international expansion. This is a picture of Kuala Lumpur. The operators are expanding to serve the PC online gamers in Southeast Asia, North America, Europe, Russia, kind of everywhere. The Chinese government aggressively hopes for Chinese games to generate $32 billion of revenue by 2015. And on our earlier slide, I said that we forecast $14 billion for games within China. So either that means that they think there's going to be a lot more growth in the market than we think, which is already a lot of growth in China, or it means that they're expecting these Chinese game companies to develop a lot of revenue overseas. But that would mean that they really dominate the whole global market. They also expect that the government also expects that there will be 100 games exported from China worldwide, and three to five of those will make it into the top 10 games globally. But if you recognize that already there are 150 million gamers, that if a game is number one in China, it's already going to be in the top 10 globally, just because there's so many people playing it in China itself. So in a way, it sounds a little more daunting than the reality. There's always going to be a regulatory struggle because the Communist Party is pretty much there to stay, and they really just want to promote stability in among the countrymen, and they believe that that means monitoring the content that gets discussed on the internet, in public, through the games, whatever. So no amount of political pressure is going to change that anytime soon. And you really need to then work, if as a foreign company, you need to work within the confines of what the reality is in China. So it's a shame that there's a need to license games through a Chinese operator. There's some of these rules that shouldn't be, you know, they're not representative of the party's desire to suppress some content. Things like game operators who have technical expertise, they should be able to operate their own game in China. But there are different rules and different reasons behind each rule. But the World Trade Organization and the International Trade Commission and different groups, they are working actively to help figure out better ways to make it a more even playing field for foreign game companies in China. And there are rules in other areas of interactive media, such as movies. It had been that 10 movies a year, I believe, were being approved. 5 movies from the United States could be approved a year. It was sort of this unwritten quota. And now that's bumped up to 14, but all of the additional movies need to be 3D movies. And so they come up with all these different ways to make things tricky. But the International Trade Commission, the Senate Finance Committee, you know, the Entertainment Software Association, they're working on these issues, and they take our data, and they use our data within their testimonies and whatever. And we try very hard to be, objective and never get thrown in a Chinese thought police prison for talking about our political views and things to that effect. So it's really just high integrity data and analysis that we publish. So the Chinese government uses it, the Singapore government uses it, the American government uses it. There are lots of different entities all at work trying to help grow foreign presence within the Chinese market. And that about sums it up. I think the takeaway here is that there are plenty of lessons to learn about online games for all of the burgeoning growth of online games outside of China. A lot of people, we hear last week at Game Developers Conference or at a conference at Stanford a couple weeks before that, big famous game companies are talking about, the new free-to-play games and the new microtransactions and the new this and the new that within online games and online games of the future. But they were talking about 4 years behind what we already knew was going on in China. So there are a lot of lessons to learn from what's happened with Korean games in China and Chinese games in China. And we can kind of shortcut some of the stuff that's gone wrong by, as foreign companies, learning from them. But I think that we should also apply the American creativity of development and the expression of different types of genres of games. And then together learning all those lessons, I see a bright future for PC online games. Thank you. And I'm sure we have time for questions, but I don't have a watch, so I have no idea what time it is.
You got time.
Okay. So if anybody would like to ask any questions. Yes? What's your name?
My name is Tarek. I'm from Egypt.
Okay.
It's very interesting talk, by the way.
Thank you.
I'd like to be a little bit more optimistic than you and think that there's going to be social change in Egypt, in China, sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I'm coming out of a revolution in Egypt as well, so that's why I kind of see things brighter. If that happens, how do you think the game industry changing with like socio-political change in China, moving out of the dictatorship? It's not really communism, and I think it's just the name. Realistically, it's just a brutal dictatorship. That's what it is. So how do you think they can, the game industry will change if they kind of move out of that and kind of gain more freedom and pressure the authorities?
I think it would benefit the gamers, the Chinese gamers, the game companies, I think the professionals that want to enter the game industry, everybody would benefit by having more openness and exchange of ideas. And I think it would grow the market domestically and also probably grow the market internationally for those games. But I guess if we stand on your assumption that there will be that political change, I think it would make it a bright, shiny world, but I'm not sure I concur. Any other questions? Yes? What's your name?
Adam, hi. Game addiction is pretty huge in Asian countries.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know Korea has put some pretty extreme limits on the youth playing games. Does China really care about that at all?
Oh, yeah.
Regulatory law? Stuff.
Yeah, I'm glad you raised this because I completely left it out, unintentional. But yes, there are big regulations that are protecting Chinese youth from too much gameplay. They have the same type of rules they have in Korea, and you can only play for 3 hours in a row. If you play more than that, if people under 18 who have registered with their real name, which is the biggest problem, they're trying to enforce real name registrations, a lot of kids just take their parents' ID cards and use their numbers to bypass. But the parents are instructed not to let that happen, and they are cracking down pretty hard on real name registrations. So if the gamer has registered using his or her real name and they're under 18, they can only play for 3 hours in a row. If they play more than that, their game play slows down and then they start to be de-leveled. I'm not sure if that's really the word. If you play more than 5 hours in a row, you're shut off and you go back to level one. So, and you can't play more than a certain number of hours in any 24-hour period. The internet cafes are officially shut between midnight and 8 a.m. And many cities are not allowed to let kids in school uniform, but they're not allowed to let kids in under 18 anyway. So there's kind of rules upon rules. And there are green games, a big push towards what the government's calling green games, which are games that are okay for youth. And they already ban all the super violent. You'll never see Grand Theft Auto in China. Even if there's social change, you're still not going to see Grand Theft Auto. And most of the games are okay for kids, I guess. Not for my kids who are 4 and 6, but for other kids, maybe. Yes, what's your name?
Is there a place for advertisers supporting games or brands that are creating games for marketing purposes, or are these just straight-up games on a kind of a, you know, you just pay to play?
Can you tell me your name?
Oh, Leo.
Leo, thank you. Advertising supported game. Advertising generates about 3% of that revenue that I talked about. In-game advertising I'm talking about. Not really advertising around the game, but game. If you think about the fact that so many of the MMORPGs are based on cultural or mythical history, the Legend of Three Kingdoms or the Monkey King and things like that, it's hard to stick a Big Mac in the middle of the Legend of the Three Kingdoms because it's historically based. But in the racing games, they advertise the Bridgestone tires, or, you know, in the freestyle basketball, they advertise Nike sneakers or Leaning sneakers or whatever it is. So there's some advertising going on to that level. But most of the money is generated from games that would just be inappropriate for the use of that. Yes, what's your name? Okay.
So you don't see a lot of brands coming in and developing their own games that basically are competitors to the regular games. Like, not necessarily brand placement, but more brand driven. So if you were to create a game about, you know, what you go to stores or, you know, brand that basically creates their own.
I think there's totally an opportunity for that. That would be a really cool segment to try to develop there. We haven't seen a lot of it so far.
So if they had a company domestically in China, mm-hmm. or a branch of it, then you would be able to develop something of your own because you're already in the country.
You can develop from any country. You just can't operate it yourselves. And any company like a shoemaker who develops a game is not going to then also own a bunch of servers and have that technical infrastructure.
So if Nike came in and tried to do a basketball or sports series of games, but it would not be necessarily about Nike products specifically, just a sport.
Yeah. Do you work for Nike? Okay, because Nike China called us recently. Actually, maybe they're doing something about that. They could do that, and it could be Nike branded. There's no regulation banning certain branding. It's just the operation, which, you know, goes back to the telecom infrastructure. And do you want foreigners owning the telecom infrastructure? We have the same struggle here in Congress. Here, I mean, it's in the paper this week about foreigners selling foreign-made equipment to the telecom providers here. So I think that it's kind of a problem that's not isolated to just China, but that I think that you could have brands like Nike China or the Chinese versions develop games or concepts of games. I'm sure they would outsource the actual development, you know, and then have games built around that.
And is it legal to drive that back to Apple purchase?
To what? I'm sorry?
Is it legal to have that be driven back to some kind of point of purchase? So if you had, say, a phone game, that if you had a phone game and then basically you could win, you could win codes, you could win links, that would drive you back to buying a product at a store, winning something, being sent something, or having access.
You could, yeah, it's legal, but there are strict guidelines about what's considered gambling.
So online instant win would be considered gambling, of course.
If everyone didn't win. But there are lotteries and different things that you could do. You can win something that's less than $300, or I can't remember. It's some level. It's okay.
Or the sweepstakes, then.
Yeah, but there is a game. It's called ZT Online. It's by Giant Interactive, and they had treasure boxes in the game, and you spun a wheel of chance, and depending on what you landed on, the treasure box would open, and then you might get something good in the treasure box, and the government made them take out that feature. So,
would the government have to capitalize on that in some way, shape, or form?
I can't tell you. I have no idea.
Were they adverse to the spinning wheel or the treasure box?
Treasure box.
Okay.
So is it the elements of luck or is it...
Yeah, chance. The games of chance are gambles. You can spin the wheel and, you know, if you know that all the objects on the wheel are something within the game, but I guess within these treasure boxes, it was just a big bump of power or some sort of strength or something, and it made an unfair advantage, they were saying. Yes.
How about demographics? Is this a young male phenomenon, or is there other genres that appeal to, you know, say, middle-aged women and things like that?
It's pretty broad, actually. And not so... Here, in the United States, we see a lot of high school students playing, you know, Xbox or whatnot. The high school system in China is crazy intense. And it's college, which is where things lighten up quite a bit. And so we don't see, you know, on average, high schoolers might play 5 hours a week. And a lot of these high schools are boarding schools during the week, and then they might go home on the weekends. And during the week, they wake up at 6:20, they go to bed at 10:40. Every single minute of the day is plotted out for them. So they might go home, and if they have some free time, they could play a few hours during the weekends. And if they're not legally allowed to go into internet cafes, there's not a lot of outlet for them. But once they go to college, and they're old enough, and they can make their own decisions, and they might have a PC in their room or something, or in their dorm floor, then they play a lot more. And then after they graduate, like the 22-year-old and up, or 24 to 30 is the category we see the most prominent gamers. And it's about 70% male, 30% female. Sometimes 35, let me get my math straight. And for the social games, there's a wide range, and a lot of housewives at home, you know, playing the online version of anything that they would play with their friends normally. And there's also, interestingly, a pushback against online games because that's where a lot of people are making their friends in the virtual world. But now in Shanghai and in many other cities, you can go, instead of to an internet cafe, you could also choose to go to a gaming apartment. Somebody has just put out a bunch of tables with Monopoly or other board games, actual games with like actual pieces you actually move, not digital. And you pay about the same amount as you would pay it at an internet cafe, and they offer little snacks and sodas as they would at an internet cafe. And you just play face-to-face across a table because people are craving real-life social interaction. It's very expensive to go out to dinner or to the movies or to anything else. And so when you're young and you have some time, you might not always want to be by yourself in front of your PC. But that is such a prevalent way of entertainment that they now are coming up with even innovative ways to get back to basics. Any other questions? Okay.
The Korean game developers had a lot of success in China. Do you know why you think that has been the case? Do you see that continuing to have success, or is that changing?
There's no reason why they would stop having success unless... It's just like Hollywood. It's a hit-driven business. Whoever's developing the game that's popular, you know, they survive. But the Korean started building online games before the Chinese, and so they were the first ones in the market, and they really, you know, they develop more Asian faces. Some of our clients, they'll develop this, like, great game and just be a whole bunch of round white faces, and we'll say, you know, you have to make it look like the people who are playing it. People are attracted to developing an avatar that either totally doesn't look like themselves or really looks like themselves or sort of has their same facial structure but maybe pink hair. But you can't really just assume that everybody wants to be blonde-haired, blue-eyed. So in Korea, they had a lot of the similar cultural, you know, lifestyle ways of Asian-ness. That's not a word, but, you know. And they were able to develop games that were appropriate for that marketplace, and they also have really high penetration of for internet and usage in Korea, like 85% home internet penetration, broadband, and a bunch of internet cafes, and so they had a lot of earlier development of PC online games to satisfy all these people who were able to play them, and then those were easily exported to China, and then that's how the market got going. There's still a lot of crossbreeding going on with Korean and Chinese games. Yes?
I think I saw at the beginning of your presentation, your company does a lot of work in China, but also is expanding into other areas of into Southeast Asia.
Uh-huh.
I didn't see Korea and Japan on those, though.
No. Well, Japan is just a different beast altogether. You know, there's Asia, and then there's Japan. And then... And Korea and Japan, I used to be an equity analyst in Japan, actually. But the main reason that we don't cover Korea and Japan is because other analysts already do. And we're pretty small. Like, on a good day, we're 8 people, including the interns. So we really have to be focused on what it is that we do. This is already a big enough market, plus 6 countries in Southeast Asia. And I think that if there were a lot of demand from our existing clients to add Korea and Japan, maybe we would do that. But right now, we do those countries on a custom basis. So we can have a survey that compares game usage and certain things. And we also can do analysis of platform providers that are based in different countries or, you know, whatever the case may be. There's a lot of tie-ups. Like Nexon of Korea, their headquarters is officially in Japan. But then Nexon just... formed a JV for Korea with Perfect World of China. So there's a lot of stuff that we need to know about all those 3 countries anyway, China, Japan, and Korea. But they behave relatively differently, whereas our expansion to cover Southeast Asia is kind of a natural one because those countries are really following along the same path that China did in its growth. So we can use a lot of our assumptions and our market knowledge to help build analysis about those markets that is really kind of on the mark already. So it'd be a lot different if we came from only analyzing the U.S. market and then tried to go analyze there. But Vietnam is essentially China 5 years ago. I mean, like eerily so. Yep.
So Western games can push technology a lot because we invest in new computers a lot. And from what I know, China doesn't a lot for the internet cafes. How does that play into game development? Is it kind of a roadblock because they have to meet what their users are using?
Well, surprisingly, the internet cafes have kind of leapfrogged technology where they do update themselves frequently. So the games, though, there was a a big rush of development of just 2D games, two-dimension games, or 2.5D instead of 3D games, because the cities further away from Shanghai and Beijing didn't have as much infrastructure, and the technology wasn't there to play those games. But now the cafes pretty much can play any 3D game, and you know there's a big channel presence for NVIDIA's GPUs, for example. And they can just, most of the computers are what we call white box. Now they're compiled independently, but they compile them using state-of-the-art kind of components for the gaming side of things. And the use of internet cafes, as I mentioned, is declining anyway, because there is a big push toward PC penetration in the home, and there are several government initiatives that promote that. Including this, like, trade your old technology for new technology campaign that's been going on for a while, and other pushes to have every household have a PC, and with everybody that has a school age child or something. There are ways that they're trying to get PCs in the homes. Yep.
My name is Vasi. Uh-huh. The Netherlands.
Uh-huh.
I suggest all about PC, but do you have some insights maybe on mobile as well?
Mm-hmm. Mobile is a big, huge, growing segment of the market, and the data, the revenue from mobile games as of last year was probably only about 5% of the revenue, equal to 5% of the revenue of PC online games, but it's growing quickly. So, you know, even with social games, in 2009, it was about $80 million and for social games, and in 2011 it was $850 million. So there's big growth in these newer areas. Mobile games, we're in the process of interviewing the mobile carriers right now, because our data so far is collected from asking the gamers and the game developers about the growth of mobile game usage. We also cooperate with Apple to try to understand the best ways to get this data of an area that just kind of, you know, came out of nowhere. They were all using just not smartphones, just simple handsets, playing simple games, and they were already preloaded and downloaded for free, so nobody really cared. But now, over the last couple of years, the penetration of smartphones and tablets is going crazy, and there is the Apple, the iStore, or what do they call it? App Store. And you can get games that way, but the mobile phones are, it's called jailbreaked immediately upon purchase, and then you don't have to go through the App Store to get your games. So it's really hard to track, and there are a lot of different brands of phones that are really popular. A lot of different, like, I think there were something more than 80 different brands of tablets that were really popular, you know. And so we're trying to track all these different things, but Apple is the most prominent brand so far.
And is there sort of a trend in type of games? For instance, are the mobile games just extensions from the big ones that you just showed?
No, they're uniquely developed. There's actually a site called App Annie that has China, and you can go in and see the most popular iPhone games and iPad games for China. For free, you can check it out. And he's giving me a signal that I've got 1 minute. So, anybody have any more questions? All right, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.